Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, the contract numbers are out, and I saw you were tweeting about them the other day, two days ago. And I have one, I guess, gripe with your math on your, you know, how you see the Lakers cap going.
Okay, and you're talking about the 2021 projections and all that?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
You didn't take into account the Kentavious Caldwell-Pope tax.
If LeBron doesn't re-sign, KCP's probably gone, right?
I don't know. Anthony Davis is also clutch.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that's true, isn't it? He's going to be like the accidental Laker. He's going to be here for like 8 years, isn't he?
He's going to get his number retired.
Oh, jeez.
He's going to get a statue. He's paid
enough. We're off to a great start.
I feel like, do you think this would actually make people sad? If you compare the amount of money that Kentavious Caldwell-Pope has made as a Laker to, like, some of your favorite Lakers of all time, even, like, some of the greatest Lakers of all time, it would probably make some people sad.
Yeah.
We won't do that, though.
I dedicate this episode to my boy Zane, who does a lot of the graphic design for me and is the only KCP stan I know. Mm-hmm. We're doing this preview on him, and so this is for you, Zane. I will try to not slander him. I can't make any promises for Anthony, but I will try to be on my best KCP behavior. In all seriousness, though, like, KCP's a pretty important player for this team this year.
He's actually a lot more interesting. The more I thought about him and his season and the way that things have gone for him as a Laker, and really over his career, there are some things, there are some narratives, and not even necessarily narrative has become more of a pejorative word at this point, but there, you know, there's just the way that his career has played out. Like, one trend that has really stuck out to me is that when, like, the more important games get, I feel like the worse he plays. Mm-hmm. Right. And then, like, the less stakes involved with the game, the better he seems to look. He plays a lot looser. He hits open jumpers and stuff like that. And it's a completely intangible thing. But we really saw it last year. Like, the end of season KCP last year was the kind of KCP the Lakers wouldn't mind paying $8 million for this year.
Not at all, man. He balled out. And, yeah, you know, there's part of it. He did some work with Lethal Shooter about halfway through the season, mm-hmm, that he shot a lot better in the second half of the year. So that you can, you know, convince yourself that, hey, you know, maybe he just made some adjustments and this is what he would be in more important games. But, yeah, I always kind of give some side eye to guys who, like, just freaking ball out at the end, yeah, of the season. Now, it's a little different than a guy like Alex Caruso, right? Where Caruso didn't have the opportunity,
right,
earlier in the season, and KCP did. He actually started the first two or three games of the year, mm-hmm, and was just, it was just bad earlier, yeah, on and ended up spending most of the season coming off of the bench as a result.
Yeah. So, as you guys can tell, today is going to be the Kentavious Caldwell-Pope preview in the latest edition of our preview series. We'll start, as we usually do, with the season that was and the years up to this season that have been. We are going to then look at him individually, and then finally in the third segment we'll talk about him and the team construct. So last year he finishes the season averaging 16.6 points a game. That's 30 per 36.
No, that's 36. Per 36.
Yeah, I was like, that I would not be complaining nearly as much about him. He finishes the season averaging 11.4 points per game, just a shade under a steal per game, just a shade over an assist per game. He played all 82, started 23 of them. The starting all 82, given the injury issues, or playing in all 82, given the injury issues that the Lakers have, is really an underrated stat on, mm-hmm, KCP's part. You need guys to stay healthy, and you look over the course of his career, 80 games his rookie season, 82 his second season, 76, 76, 74, 82 last year. So he's been healthy So that's at least a foundational part of his game. And, you know, you can kind of understand why he stays healthy. He plays within himself quite a bit. He doesn't overextend, maybe to his detriment in some cases.
Wait. When we're talking plays within himself, we're not including hero shots at the end of games.
I mean,
from a physical standpoint.
Yeah. I mean, one of my issues with watching Anthony Davis play is that he'll have like three plays per game that you watch and you're like, oh my God, don't do that. Just don't. We didn't have to go for that tip dunk up 17 in the third quarter. Like, we didn't need that. We didn't need that one. You never have to worry about that with KCP.
So first, I'm finding it very difficult to not just slander the man.
No, go for it.
I've been thinking a lot about KCP this summer because he's a guy that I think is really important. I think he is a borderline starting caliber guard on a team that does not have much in the way of that. And he's a guy who can defend ones. So there is a theoretical, like, you know, we talk about who are the closing five for the Lakers, and we might fantasize about Andre Iguodala, but dude ain't on the team and he's not available, right? Never. So when we're talking about it right now, in those playoff and closing lineups of AD at the five, LeBron or Kuz at the four and the other at the three, Danny Green at the two, who's that fifth guy, right? Mm-hmm. And KCP's the guy who is currently on the roster who might have the best argument for being that fifth guy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like you said, my favorite was from a couple years ago when he tried the, you know, LeBron or Kobe throw it off the backboard and, you know,
missed the backboard altogether.
Right. He hit the shot clock with the lob to himself. And it was just like, I think that was when he had the ankle bracelet on from being in prison. It was just like the most quintessential. I just remember being on like the media row and around like Lakers people who had just, he's a guy who can really just stick in people's craw. And mm-hmm. that was just like the quintessential KCP play. But it's kind of like JaVale in that JaVale's a guy I've always defended in that, like, you know, for every one spectacularly dumb play that he will make, he'll make like three or four good and sometimes really smart plays, right? Mm-hmm. So KCP is of a similar ilk. He had the best true shooting percentage of his career last year, obviously bolstered by the end of that end of the year run. But he's like, he's a solid player. I don't know if I trust him in the final five in important games, but he's really important for what this team could be.
So what I've kind of found myself going up against, and I can't help but like chuckle at that play. Like every time I think of KCP, the camera picked up his shoulder slump just perfectly after he threw the play. It's so great. Anywho, so the two kind of narratives that I see kind of going up against each other this year is that the Lakers are going to play with stakes, and he's going to have to figure out a way to play better while those stakes are involved, right? Mm-hmm. But they need him a lot less this year than they needed him last year.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. And so as a result, I think his role will be a lot more realistic to what he actually brings to the table. And he so much so that there's a chance he can outplay that role and find his way into the final five, you know, every second or third game or so, you know, just depending on how Avery Bradley is playing that game. Maybe Alex Caruso is a better matchup, whatever. But I think he might. Expectations, you and I talk a lot about expectations. There are no expectations for KCP. Like, everybody's just kind of like, oh yeah, he's on the roster. Mm-hmm. That's right. And he might, I really think there's a good chance here that he can outshine expectations. And so what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick second. When we come back, I want to talk about individually what he can do, what he needs to improve on, things that we saw last year. His shooting is weird to me. Mm-hmm. So I want to talk about his shooting last year. That's what we'll open up the second segment when we talk about his individual game and steps forward that he can still make. So we'll come back to that here in a second. Can you believe Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is only going to be 26 next year?
It's crazy, right? He's been a starter, and it seems kind of like washed up is too harsh, but
yeah.
He seems like a guy who's like on the downside of his career. But yeah, no, he's like entering his prime.
It's we do this weird thing where with young players, we'll just completely overlook blips because they you say to yourself, oh, yeah, that guy's just going to improve. Mm-hmm. But after a player is in the league now for 5 or 6 years, those blips outshine what they actually provide because the growth isn't necessarily there in the same way, just mathematically, just from straight age range. And I think that's kind of where we're at with KCP. He's just – I can't – KCP to me feels like that jacket that, you know, maybe a few years ago you figured you could stretch yourself into. You'd say like, oh, man, I – this jacket isn't really me, but maybe we can figure it out. And then like a couple years later, everybody's wearing that same kind of jacket and you go, huh, I'll give it a shot with no expectations whatsoever. And then like every third outfit or so, people go like, whoa, that's a nice jacket, dude. Look at that. Do you get it?
This tells you about like my degree of fashion sense, but I cannot relate to that analogy. I will just take your word for it.
All right. So I want to start, like I said, the last segment, at the end of the last segment, I want to start with a shooting. And so his 3-point shooting dropped to about 347 or so, right? 34.7%. Mm-hmm. His 2-point shooting went through the roof. Mm-hmm. So his 2-point shooting over his career, 44.7%, 44.9%, 48.9%, 44.2%, 47.3%, and then 54.2% last year.
Mm-hmm.
It's just
he was insane from on those long twos between 16 feet and the 3-point line. He shot 48.8%. His previous career high was 38.3% from that range. So, oh, no, excuse me. His previous career high was 41.3% from that range. So, you know, 7.5% better than the best he's ever shot from that range. So it does seem like a bit of an aberration, but he is a good, like, his value is the ability to run off of screens. Now, he's kind of a theoretical shooter in that, like, his 3-point percentage, he's never been a guy that's one of the best 3-point shooters in the game. His previous year with the Lakers, his first year, was his career high. He shot 38.3%. Mm-hmm. But last year, when he shot 34.7%, that was more in line with his career averages, right? He was, right. You know, we're talking his time in Detroit, 31.9%, 34.5%, 30.9%, and then 35%, which was his previous career high before he got to the Lakers. So, but he's a guy who can run off of screens and he can shoot league average, slightly below league average coming off of them. And those are different types of shots than your standard catch and shoot threes, which he does, you know, he does get those attempts too. But a guy who can run off of those staggers and whatnot, he was the best of bad options that the Lakers had in the past. And I'm curious to see him alongside on a roster that has better shooting, right? Where he's not the shooter, he's a shooter. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. One thing that's kind of standing out to me here, and it's on so low attempts per game, but his one dribble stats, when now he wasn't having as many defenders close out as hard to him last year because his shooting took a dip from out there. But his shooting off of one dribble in general was 55.3%.
Yeah, he's a good pull-up shooter, man. He's a, you know, he's a guy that's got good technique. He's that goes along with the whole ability to come off of stagger screens and off ball screens and be okay with that. Going from on the move, especially side to side rather than toward the basket, his ability to collect his feet is really good. So yeah. His issues are more, I think, up top. I'm really curious to know what Lethal Shooter worked with him on specifically because there is something there. And if that 34, 35% can go to 37, 38, 39%, which isn't out of the question, those are the types of, you know, small fixes like that in something up top gives you 2-3 percentage points. That makes a big difference.
His shot to me has always seemed it's gone against the grain to me in one specific area, and it's actually up top the way you talk about. His off elbow sticks out a little bit more than I like it to, I've preferred in like the classical kind of shooters. You can get away with that a little bit more with guys like Steph, who just their off elbow is on the ball for so their off hand is on the ball for so little time that like whatever. But when you shoot up top and your off elbow starts sticking out, well then you start to see the lateral movement in misses and stuff.
Yeah, when you flare your offhand elbow, sometimes that means you're putting side to side pressure on the ball, and that'll impact it. You don't want to be doing that with your offhand.
And you know, I would like to hear what Lethal Shooter says about, you know, that, if that's what they're focused on, you know, if they're interested in fixing the flaring of the elbow, which you usually don't want to do because that's a major aspect of the shot, or if they're trying to mitigate against the issue that arises from flaring out that elbow. So I'd be interested to see what they do there with that. And look, if like you said, we're not talking about some insane jump. We aren't hoping that Brandon Ingram goes from 31% to 37, right? Mm-hmm. This is a shooter that we've seen have a 37% three-point shooting on decent attempts, by the way.
Right.
On six or more attempts per game, he was shooting about 37-38% 2 years ago. If he just gets up near there, I don't think he'll have as many attempts this year because his role is going to be smaller. If he could just be better at those attempts and get up from the 35, I think it was the 36-ish percent that he was last year, to 38-39, now you're talking about somebody who, you know, the Lakers need people to space the floor, especially if Dwight Howard is going to be playing a lot of minutes, if JaVale McGee is going to be playing a lot of minutes. Mm-hmm. Those guys that they have out there, like, all this really comes down to is, look, if I were Frank Vogel, I would say, KCP, you can attempt one off the backboard shot per game if you shoot 40% from 3 points.
It's a fair trade-off.
but that's, I mean, and that's what this all gets down to, is that the expectations for him are basically non-existent. There are people at his position who you know, they're new, right? In Avery Bradley's case, and even Alex Caruso's case, because KCP is going to be playing a lot of one, I would imagine, you know, only in name. He's not going to be, like, running the offense. But there's just more shallow, interesting players out there for him, but there's a very realistic path for him to be good for the Lakers. It's just a matter of whether or not he actually hits those shots. And it's maddening because for us, we want to find, like, more explicable, deeper ways for somebody to provide value, but it's just like, no, just make three-pointers. It's great.
Yeah. There's one dynamic that I'm curious about this season that I don't think was able to be seen on TV, but one thing I always found curious was at halftime, KCP and Rich Paul would be talking all the time. Like, that was who Rich Paul, very little to LeBron, but Rich Paul and KCP, and Rich Paul was basically coaching him. And I do know that one of the messages was like, shoot, when you, like, shoot, get your shots up. And what's funny is all of the rumors, which I, you know, from everything I know, were true about Rich Paul not being the biggest Luke Walton fan out there, had less to do with LeBron and more to do with KCP, right? KCP was not Luke Walton's favorite player. And he had a pretty quick hook on KCP in a contract year for him. Early in the season when he struggled, he was out of the starting lineup 2-3 games in, or very early on, right? And so I'm curious to see if KCP tones it down a bit. Let me ask you this, Anthony. What did you think of KCP's season 2 years ago?
I thought he was fine.
So if we get that KCP next year, are you happy with that?
Perfectly happy.
Me too. And I'm wondering,
especially at, like, lesser money.
Right, exactly. And I'm wondering if that's going to be more of the version that we get, because there isn't that dynamic there right now. Who knows how it works out with Vogel, but I do know that there was animosity there between KCP, Rich Paul, and Luke Walton. So I'm hoping, and, you know, when you've got your agent on the sidelines at halftime going, shoot the ball, shoot the ball, shoot the ball, shoot the ball, it's going to be to the detriment of your team at times. And if in the absence of that, we may get a better version of him.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for. Let's take a second here. We'll let that segue us naturally into how he fits in that team construct, because the Lakers talk a lot about competition and open competition and how that makes everybody involved in the organization better. That isn't always the case. And I kind of felt like last year we saw how it isn't the case with KCP and Josh Hart specifically, that their open competition probably took away from what KCP was able to offer. So let's take a quick second here and come back and see how he fits into the team construct, the organizational construct, and what statue the Lakers are probably going to be getting ready to put him in. So I just to pick right up where we left off. Would you agree with me that the idea of open competition for that starting shooting guard spot and for the majority of those shooting guard minutes, do you think that hurt KCP last year? Like how he handled that situation?
Yeah. So I don't think there's anything wrong inherently with the open competition. I don't think KCP handled that well. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. The thing is like, isn't there an argument to be made that the same thing's true coming up this year? Like, we don't really have, like, all the guards that we have are all pretty closely bunched together. Like, if you're an optimist, you say, hey, we've got at least a deep group of guards, right? None of these guys are stars, but all of these guys have played roles in rotations and the one who hasn't in Caruso is a guy who, you know, showed a lot that is a young player that we've got high hopes for, right? Mm-hmm. So, but none of them are like, you can't really make the argument this guy's way better than that guy, right? We talk about Rondo. Maybe Rondo's at the bottom of that list, and we always kind of forget Troy Daniels. But you know what I'm saying, right? Like, there are like four mm-hmm. or five guys that Quinn Cook, Alex Caruso, Avery Bradley, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope that are kind of close. And so isn't there going to be that same dynamic again? And then does KCP handle that the same way?
I wonder if it's easier for him to compete with an Avery Bradley, who he probably considers closer to a peer, if mm-hmm. not, you know, mentor. Because I think Bradley's a little older than he is.
He is, yeah.
I wonder if it's easier for him to compete with Avery Bradley, who he's probably more inclined to compete with, than like Josh Hart last year, who was what? He was a second-year player, and the fans very clearly liked Hart a lot more than KCP. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if it's easier for him to compete there. Do you think there's anything there for KCP?
No, I think that's a fair point. I also think this is the same dude that turned down, like, what, 5 years, $80 million, or it was 4 years, $80 million from the Pistons. And I think there is some degree of, like, legend in his own mind type mm-hmm. of thing going on with KCP, where I'm not entirely sure that it's going to matter if it's Avery Bradley he's competing with or yeah. Josh Hart. But I do think that is more like that probably sits better with a veteran than a kid coming in and taking your spot.
You have to have like an outlandish amount of confidence in yourself to just attempt that off the backboard thing.
That's what I'm saying, man. Like KCP, and just think of all of the potential game-winning shots that, like, how many times did KCP, yeah. was he the guy who took the shot? And you're like, no, what are you doing?
Right. Like, there were games where I was like, get KCP off the court, because you knew he was going to try to hero ball that shit.
And he did. There was one play, gosh, I want to say it was against Portland, or it was a game that the Lakers lost, where he shot this, like, double-clutch corner three with, like, 8 seconds left in the game, and Lakers were within three, and it was just like, that is, like, look, if KCP's open for a catch-and-shoot three, let it fly, right? But yeah. those, like, superstar, you know, remember when Kobe, somebody'd be all over him, and he'd, like, stare him down and just raise up, like, that was the type of shot KCP took, and those are the types of shots that he takes. You combine yeah. just all of these, like, turn down, like, $20 million a year, be like, no, I'm better than that, and I'm going to lob this off the backboard to myself and dunk, I guess, or these hero shots at the end of games. It just, all of it combines for this guy who thinks he's better than he actually is. So yeah. and those are the type of things that worry me. Like, KCP is exactly the guy who's going to be like, it's like game five of the second round of the Western Conference semifinals, and KCP's in the
game. My time to shine, baby.
My time to shine. That's exactly what it is, right? Like, I'm going to knock this down, I'm going to be a hero, and I'm going to give me a fat contract this offseason, right? So that is the type of stuff I worry about with him.
Me too. by a lot. And I, and again, when you guys hear me laugh about that stuff, it's literally my coping mechanism.
Sure, sure.
Because I can recall that shot that he took that made me throw shit at the TV.
Right.
Right. Like, it, you just have to laugh your way through it, or else I'd be like through five TVs already at this point. I want to know here with KCP though, with whether by having LeBron and Anthony Davis and having Clutch have such a grasp on the organization, whether that might help him. You know, it's maybe LeBron kind of looks at him as like, dude, you're not that guy, right? Anthony Davis looks at him like, dude, you're not that guy. Is there anything that can get KCP to not think he's that guy?
My concern is that it empowers him, right?
I know. Like, as I was saying it, I was like, fuck.
Like, those are his dude. Clutch is a family, right? Like, those guys are meaningful to each other because they do take a lot of heat from the outside and a lot of criticism. And when that happens, what happens to your group that's in it? You come closer together in order to protect from the attacks, right? So my concern is, like, KCP's like, not only is LeBron here now, AD's here now, like, these are my guys, and this is like, I can do what I want. What are they going to do? Cut me? Like, Rich Paul and Clutch have a lot of power in this organization. So my concern is it goes the other way. But there were a few times last season where LeBron was like, what the hell are you doing? Right. Yeah. And so I do hope that there's that, bro, at the end of the day, this is LeBron's team now. Yeah. And it always was last year, but even more so this year. These are his guys, and so
Casey, even while he's like trying to empower Anthony Davis, that's his call to empower Anthony Davis.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and with all of that said, like, KCP is a guy who is going to fall in line. But LeBron's going to have to be the guy who puts him there. It's not going to be Frank Vogel. It's not going to be Jason Kidd. It's probably not going to be Anthony Davis for the whole, like, we're peers, we're the same age. You know, it's going to be LeBron, one of the greatest players to ever play the game, be like, you need to tone it down. And if LeBron is going to take control of this team, that's exactly the type of specific that he needs to do. One question I do have for you, Anthony, kind of more on the court type stuff, is the defensive end. How important is KCP to what the Lakers could be on that end of the court?
I mean, he's one of three guys who I can confidently say can maybe guard ones.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, point of attack defense is kind of a touchy subject. Some people consider it super duper valuable. Some people say just don't get beat off the dribble a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
If the Lakers design their defense around, hey, just don't get beat off the dribble a bunch, Avery Bradley, KCP, Alex Caruso, all three of those guys can fulfill that role. But if they ever at any point, you know, say they go small and they say, we are going to limit the amount of the burden that Davis has to carry as a rim protector with perimeter pressure, that's where I think all three of those guys, KCP, Avery Bradley, Alex Caruso, all those guys are really going to struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it just depends on what kind of defense. And fortunately, the Lakers have, you know, this is one of the few things I'm really confident in the coaching staff in its ability to do, is design a defense around the talent that they have.
Mm-hmm.
And so I, in that respect, he's really, especially, you know, if Bradley is hurt and it turns out Caruso is just a cult figure, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now you're really looking at it, you know, like, wow, this is KCP now becomes the more important player than maybe he's ready to be. How would you roll with that?
Yeah, I think his on-the-ball defense is a little bit overrated. He gets beat with straight-line drives a little more than I would like for a guy that I would consider to be really good at that. It's also something that, like, the more – this goes back to the whole, you know, Rich Paul talking to him at halftime type thing. The more committed KCP is to the team, I think, like, he's got the capability of doing that. I think he's at his best when he's trailing shooters. He does a phenomenal job of defending Steph Curry. He's one of the better defenders on Steph because he navigates off-ball screens really well. KCP is faster than, like, we don't talk about that very much, but he's got really good foot speed on a team that where a lot of the older players, you know, you're Dwight Howard, he can still run the 4.45, but LeBron will turn the jets on when he wants to, especially on offense. I'm not saying that guys like Dwight and LeBron are slow, but they do not go fast all of the time. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
And KCP's a guy who, for sometimes he needs to slow down, but can put his foot on the gas pedal in a way that's valuable on the defensive end. That's one of the things I like about Caruso, right? It's like those guys that can kind of fly around and are going to be really valuable for this team. AD Pro, I'm working on this AD defensive video. Like, I knew he was good. Holy crap. This guy is unbelievable.
Yeah.
But so that ability to kind of fly around, that's like the version of the defense that I see being really good, right? Danny Green is not great in terms of foot speed, but he's really got great anticipation. So he'll read a play a step ahead of everybody else and get there quicker. So I think that like this defense, when it's at its best, it's going to seem like there are six guys on the floor instead of five. And KCP can kind of play into that. So even more than like the point of attack defense, just that like we're kind of everywhere. KCP can play into that. And he'll jump passing lanes, stuff like that is what I mean.
Yeah, my one concern, though, with like that flying around type of defense is you have to have everybody on a string. Everybody.
Yes. And or to some degree, you have to have really great rim protection, right? Like you have to have guys that erase mistakes or will like, you know, if you close out really hard on a shooter, you're going to get beat off the dribble. Or if you Avery Bradley ball pressures a guy 25 feet from the rim, he's going to get beat off the dribble. Can you have guys back there that erase mistakes? Sorry to cut you off, but I do think that they can be really aggressive on the perimeter because Dwight and Anthony Davis and JaVale McGee.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. I still don't quite consider JaVale a rim protector in the sense that he should be, right? Mm-hmm. I think he's great on a first jump. I think he's phenomenal if all he has to do is be really, really tall and jump really, really high in the air. But every single like pump fake, and he's really thin too. Like he's thinner than you want a rim protector to be. Howard is also smaller than people really notice. Remember when he was playing alongside Powell and those two guys would be standing alongside each other and Powell would have like 2 or 3 inches on him.
Yeah.
Right. So like, and then Anthony Davis, if he wants to be a rim protector, awesome. But he doesn't really seem to want to do that all the time. So.
AD's really good on defense, man. Like,
I agree.
Even as a rim protector, like that's something. He's one of the best shot blockers in the game, man. That's the one thing you said that I disagree with. With JaVale, though, I agree, but maybe for slightly different reasons. JaVale wants to block shots, which is not always the same thing as playing good defense, right? Like the main example of that is in the pick and roll, where he will open up, like you're supposed to, you know, in a drop coverage, you're supposed to contain, get wide, get in front of the ball handler. He's going to open up and be like, I dare you to drive to the rim. Let's meet up high. Let's see if I can block this, right? And a decent amount of time he does, but other times he's given up a layup because he doesn't quite get there, or the guard knows how to shoot that little floater that's just
off
beyond
the wrong
his reach.
Foot or whatever.
Right, exactly. That'll ruin his timing, something like that. They're definitely not without flaws, but I do think the Lakers can be aggressive on the perimeter more than most teams because they've got three high-end shot blockers, even with some flaws to them. And I think that benefits guys like KCP, who are at their best defensively when they're putting heat out on guys, you know, 25 feet from the rim.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. I think the Lakers' identity is going to be an offensive. They're going to be better offensively than defensively. And generally speaking, in the NBA in 2019, that's what you want your team to be anyway. The teams that make their money on defense alone, like you can go through the teams that have had success at the highest levels of the NBA lately, and none of them have been, you know, they've been good enough defensively to get stops when they matter, but they're just elite offenses. And I think, you know, if KCP, to get back to, you know, our point earlier, if he just hits jumpers, if he hits three pointers, that helps the Lakers be an elite offense. Because like, if you know Danny Green's going to be good as a three-point shooter, what you have in LeBron and AD, right? If you have a fourth guy on that team, and let's say Kuzma gets back to being more than a 30% three-point shooter also, right? And then if you get KCP out there hitting, you know, 38% of his three-pointers, like that just becomes a really difficult team to defend. And that's, to me, defense is obviously important, right? You need to be able to get stops. But for me, where KCP is going to provide his value is going to be whether or not he turns that shot around from deep and is able to build on the season that he had last year as a two-point shooter as well. Like, I think it was an outlier, but how much of an outlier was it?
Right. If he goes from 54% on twos to 51 or 50%, right? Like, that's still, right. That's still really productive.
Yeah. And then if you basically, you know, to think of it as like a video game where you can basically swap out ability points. So if you swap out a couple ability points as a 2-point shooter and become a better 3-point shooter, he becomes immensely more valuable.
That's right.
I'd be cool with that. Any last points here to make on KCP?
No, I think we've covered it. To me, he's that fifth guy right now. He's arguably the fifth best player on the team. And that's going to be important on a team that is top heavy. For all of the he does dumb stuff, you know, he's also a guy who can get really hot. And sometimes those guys can win you a playoff game just as they can lose you one, right? So he's a guy who could go for a random 30 spot because he got hot and scored 18 and a quarter or something like that. So he doesn't get talked about a lot as an X factor. And if you had to pick one, it's probably Kuzma this season. But amongst the like certified role player types, he's the guy that I think is the most important.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting. I do think that he is, it's a good thing for him to be flying under the radar the way that he is right now. He gets to go into training camp. Nobody's really talking about him. And then, you know, the first, that first few weeks of the season is going to be huge for him, because look, if KCP plays really well and Avery Bradley plays really well and Kyle Kuzma plays really well, and then, you know, it becomes like mathematically it becomes difficult for Rondo to get minutes. So the better KCP plays, the harder it is for Rondo to squeeze in minutes there.
So Rondo's going to play, like, at least at the beginning of the season.
I know.
I was thinking about this the other day. I'll leave with this because KCP is a part of this. I think the Lakers can put together, like, so I think either LeBron or AD will be on the floor at all times or just about. And I think that it's going to be AD. I think LeBron's going to play, you know, a 10-minute shift in the first quarter, maybe the entire first quarter, and then we'll be on the bench. So to me, the starting the second quarter type lineup, probably Rondo. This is something, I don't know if you watched the Connected with Frank Vogel where Geeter interviewed him one-on-one, but one of the things he said is that he views LeBron and Rondo as like the primary ball handlers, and the context in which he said it made me think
I didn't see it.
it made me think that means not together, right? Like that,
yeah.
That they're not. And so that's, if you are going to play Rondo, the best version involves him not being on the court with LeBron at the same time. So to me, Rondo's the point guard of the second unit. Not my choice, but I think that's what that's going to look like. You got KCP at the two. Then you've got Kyle Kuzma out there, along with Anthony Davis, probably at the four. And then
one of JaVale or Dwight.
Or Dwight. That's a pretty good bench where the skill set, you know, mixes in. You've got a superstar out there. You've got a shooter next to Rondo, or at least a decent one, right? Kuz being able to shoot. Like, there are so many versions and lineups where I'm like, this lineup works if Kuzma is able to shoot, right? And this is one of those types of lineups. Like, that's just, you know, I could see that being one of the more effective benches in the NBA, especially if they defend. And if Anthony Davis and JaVale or Dwight are at the nexus of that, they theoretically should be okay in that respect.
I'd feel so much more comfortable.
You just emitted a sound. It was like half cough, half like.
I just got pneumonia thinking about watching like Rondo play basketball. But I look, the sooner that Rondo is swapped out for Caruso in that spot, or even like Quinn Cook, the better I think that unit will be. And then if you just have like, I want to see whether Anthony Davis can show some more creative chops, because again, like, basically a lot of what I see from, or what I'm hoping to see from these guys, and what I consider what their successful seasons, you know, what they might look like, it basically comes down to what kind of skills or how can you play that mitigates Rondo being on the court. Like that leads to Rondo not being on the court. He's that detrimental to winning basketball, in my opinion. And so if KCP hits shots, if Kuzma hits shots, if KCP, Bradley, and Caruso defend the perimeter, if Anthony Davis shows creative chops, like all of that kind of stuff comes together and be like, well, we don't really need Rondo on the court as much, right? Because that's really, like, it's all about convincing the people who don't want to be convinced otherwise that Rondo has to be out there.
The Lakers have enough veterans at the guard spot. Like, so last year they had enough guards to, in terms of their play, warrant that sort of approach. But they were kids, right? A lot of them were kids. Lakers have enough veterans with Avery Bradley and Quinn Cook specifically who can be playing that spot and getting those minutes to where if Rondo is not bringing it, you're not asking a 21 or 22-year-old to fill that spot. Yep. And then with the third guy being Caruso, who may be the best player of the bunch at this point. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping bro, it's too early to be pessimistic for me, man. It's like we're recording this in mid-September. Like, let me get pissed off at Rondo when it happens. Let me talk myself into there being a route to if he sucks, and then it ain't going to be permanent. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. Like that. Like somebody's got to see that. There are enough people, like basketball lifers, on the coaching staff and on the bench to be able to look, you respect Rondo. He's one of your peers, but if he ain't bringing it, like there's gotta be somebody or enough people going like, we've got other options. Right. Right.
Right.
Right.
You hope so.
That's what I'm hoping.
You hope so. Look at that. A rainbow just fluttered over my house, and there's a unicorn over there, and
I'm gonna turn you into an optimist before training camp starts, Anthony. We got like 4 or 5 more pods, I think, before then.
All right, before we go, I have a pretty cool announcement. I went out. Well, I didn't go out. I went to Amazon. But I bought a cork board, and I bought Post-it notes, and I got things to stick the Post-it notes on the cork board. So we are going to be able to actually document our gambling this year.
And along those same lines, I'm getting me a Sega Genesis with NBA Jam. So you're welcome to come get some whenever you'd like.
You don't want any of this. we already have the gamble. We already have the bet between you and me that Dwight Howard will be on the roster come, what was it, the All-Star break?
I think so.
So I'll throw that one up on the board. If you guys have any bets that you want Pete and I to consider, let me know in the iTunes reviews in the form of a 5-star review, and I'll throw those up there. I'll consider them. We'll go back and forth on them on the show, and we'll see how we feel about them. Do you have a bet here?
No. This is funny. Oh. So my girlfriend listens to the pod, right? Uh-huh. And but it's usually a couple of days after she has to like catch up. She'll catch up when she goes on a long drive. She'll catch up with a bunch of them at once. And she was furious with one of the listeners in the mailbag who proposed. I think it was this Dwight Howard bet, but it may have been one of the other ones where it was like if Anthony loses, he has to do like an AMA on Reddit, and if I lose, I have to do a Jason Kidd video, and I'll leave the expletives out, but she's like, do you know how long it takes to make a video? Do they know how long? That's like 20 to 30 hours for you and like an hour for Anthony. That's not fair at all. So all I ask is that the terms of our bets are, you know, the loss or win are somewhat equitable.
Well, all right, to my counter to Jeannie's point would be that yes, I am on Reddit for less actual hours, but I will lose more hours of my life as a result of being on Reddit. So that's my counter. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Thank you guys very much for tuning in. Again, get those bets in, get your questions in the mailbag, and we'll go through all of that as they come along. I still have a few to get to, so I'll probably hit those in tomorrow's show, I would imagine. But for now, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. And make somebody else's? And we'll talk to you tomorrow.